Blog Talk Radio.
You know what gang violence is, mostly, and the people don't want you to hear this? Somebody shoots your family member, so of course you retaliate. You know what I mean? Same thing the U.S. does, except nobody even shot their family members. You know, somebody bombed a school and all these people get killed, so the United States feel like, ooh, that's messed up. We got to go show them who's the real killer. This country was built on gangs. You know, I think this country still is run on gangs, Republicans, Democrats, the police department, the FBI, the CIA, those are gangs. You know what I mean? The correctional officers. I had a correctional officer tell me straight up, we the biggest gang in New York State. Straight up.
This is what the revolution, a premeditated scheme, introducing drugs all crack to us ghetto teams. Got along for war, niggas now, play of what it be like. When will niggas see they got us leading with three strikes? Can't seem to focus, hopeless, with violent thoughts I wrote this. Got the devil petrified, hiding from my heart to focus. And so I learned to earn my currency in overtime. Affiliated, clearly click a military mind. May God forgive us, so we dwell inside of paradise. Thugged out, drug dealing, from the womb to the block. My live mind got me surviving five rounds. My 45 got me fortified with live rounds. When shit dick, we block hit, or I block stick. All hell, I don't bail, wrath, that's apocalypse. Forever ghetto, necessary picture food stamps. Outlaw thug niggas never left the food.
We got a real life shit from front to back. To my niggas in the world who block the back. From my soldiers to that, from my soldiers to that. When I fuck my soldiers to that, from my soldiers to that. We got the real life shit from front to back. To my niggas in the world who block the back. From my soldiers to that, from my soldiers to that. When I fuck my soldiers to that, from my soldiers to that.
Now I was born as a rebel, making trouble for the devil. Take this gangbang shit to a whole nother level. Can you feel me now? Armies in every city, definition of power. Play it, are you with me? See the war is the prophecy, survival is the strategy. Rest in peace to my comrades, that's the seat. Organize the streets of time, yeah, these devils petrified of a nigga in his right mind. They tell us that we hopeless and hellbound. It's for the brothers and penitentiary, jail them. I got you in my heart till the day I die. Think of the damage we could do if we wasn't high. Can you picture me low? It's the thug rap. Political contracts and bloodbath. From a Tulu Shakur up in the Rockies, though they got you. I never let them stop me, the struggle continues.
Now, if we do want to live a thug life and a gangster life and all of that, okay. So stop being cowards and let's have a revolution. But we don't want to do that. Dudes just want to live a character. They want to be cartoons. But if they really wanted to do something, they was that tough. All right, let's start our own country. Let's start a revolution. Let's get out of here. Let's do something.
Real life, from front to back. To my niggas in the world who rock the rack. When my soldiers are dead, when my soldiers are dead. When I fuck my soldiers dead, when my soldiers are dead. We got the real life, from front to back. To my niggas in the world who rock the rack. When my soldiers are dead, when my soldiers are dead. When I fuck my soldiers dead, when my soldiers are dead. Come on.
I'm a soldier for life. The battle I'm fighting has no ending. To struggle is to go the distance. To win is not to care how far one must go.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How do we get access to this, Jackson?
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer.
And now, Mr. Jackson.
Mr. Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
Waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad brothers!
Free the Soledad brothers!
Do you understand that there cannot be a peaceful revolution?
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over.
Mr. Jackson, sorry about your brother.
They will live to regret it. I'll see you today. You hear me, Eric?
Starring Gary Dorden from TV's
CSI.
This is the military, David.
Freeline, revolutionary greeting. Welcome to another edition of George University Radio. I'm your host, Mind Secure, where our goals are fivefold. Our first goal is to eradicate functional literacy among new African black prisoners. Two, to eradicate culture ignorance among new African prisoners. Three, to transfer the crew mentality to the new African mentality. And four, to assist in the rebuilding and stabilization of new African communities. Five, to prepare a new African prisoner for release, reducing new African recidivism. Before I bring on the guest tonight, I'd like to go to a couple of events that happened in history during this week. Okay, on July 26, 1847, the independence of Liberia, Africa proclaimed by ex-slaves from America. President Joseph Jenkins Roberts, a native of Virginia, made the declaration. Also on July 26, 1865, Patrick Francis Healy, the first new African awarded Ph.D. degree, passed final examinations at Louvain in Belgium. Also on July 26, 1953, Fidel Castro began armed struggle for social revolution by leading an attack on Moncada Barracks in Cuba. On July 27, 1816, Fort Blount on Apalachicola Bay, Florida, attacked by U.S. troops. The fort, which was held by fugitive slaves and Indians, were taken after a siege of several days. Also on July 27, 1898, Arlington Queen Mother Moore, esteemed elder and freedom fighter, born in Louisiana. Queen Mother Moore was the mother of reparations. She was the mother of Africa. She was a member of RAM. She was a real member of Black Panther Party out of Harlem. She was a member of the Communist Party of USA. She won the founder of the British Republic of Africa. She was an overall esteemed elder who influenced and motivated many people, such as Ilhan Omar El Shabazz, who was the father of New Africa, Robert Williams, which was one of the founders of the British Republic, Mari Abadeli, was one of the founders of the British Republic, and a whole bunch of other individuals as well, Dr. Aiken A. Yamoja, or the Dr. Muhammad Atmar, a.k.a. Max Stafford, and many other individuals. She's very influential. Also on July 27, the anti-black riot began in Chicago, Illinois, 1919, part of the Red Summer, which was a bloody massacre. Also on July 27, 1962, Martin Luther King Jr. was jailed in Albany, Georgia. Okay, on July 28, 1917, 10,000 New Africans marched down Fifth Avenue in New York City in silent parade protesting lynchings and race indignities. Also on July 28, 2003, Althea Gibson, the first New African to win the U.S. tennis championship and the Wimbledon tennis championship, died at the age of 76 in East Orange, New Jersey. On today's date, July 29, 1835, white Southerners publicly burned anti-slavery pamphlets they had received from the U.S. mail. Also on today's date, 1926, the Springer Medal, Carter G. Woodson, for 10 years of voter service, collecting and publishing the records of the Negro in America. Also on today's date, 1975, General Yakubu Gowon, head of Nigeria Provisional Military Government, was deposed while he was attending a meeting of the Organization of African Unity in Uganda. On July 30, 1822, James Barrett consecrated as the first bishop of the African Methodist Episcopal Zion Church. Also on July 30, 1863, President Lincoln and his cabinet considered an eye for eye order, warning the Confederacy that the Union would shoot a rebel prisoner for every new African prisoner shot, and would condemn a rebel prisoner to life or hard labor for every new African prisoner sold into slavery. The order would never be issued or enforced. Also on July 30, 1866, Edward G. Walker, son of abolitionist David Walker, and Charles L. Mitchell, elected to Massachusetts Assembly from Boston and became the first new African to sit in the legislature of an American state. Also on July 30, 1867, a riot broke out in Milwaukee. last on July 3rd or August 3rd. National Guard mobilized for a person to kill. Also on July the 30th, it's the born day of a political prisoner, Simon Trinidad, who was a part of the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, who was housed in Florence ADS Supermax. On July 31st, 1874, Patrick Franklin Healy, inaugurated as president of Georgetown University, the oldest Catholic university in America, and became the first new African to head a predominantly white university. Okay, on August 1st, which is the first day of Black August, 1867, new African voted for the first time in a state election in the South, contributed to Republican sweep in Tennessee. Also on August 1st, in 1914, UNIA, Universal Negro Improvement Association Community League, was founded in Jamaica to mark the 106th commemoration of the founding of the nation by the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey. It's the biggest new African movement, the greatest planet Earth. Also on August 1st, in 1920, the National Convention of Marcus Garvey Universal Improvement Association opened Liberty Hall in Harlem. The next night, Garvey addressed 25,000 new Africans at Madison Square Garden. Garvey National Movement reaches height in 1921. Also on August 1st, in 1940. Now hold on, let me skip that. Also on August 1st, Henrietta Lacks, her phenomenal human body cell, uniquely reproducing the cell even after her death in 1951, have been the key to over 10,000 medical patents and made a huge medical advancement. She was born in 1920. He's still taking advantage of the sister cells right now to this day. Also on August 1st, 1940, Dr. Benjamin E. Mays, who has been called the greatest schoolmaster in his generation, named president of Morehouse College. Also on August 1st, 1944, Adam Clay Powell Jr., elected the first new African Congress from East. Also on August 1st, 1960, Dahomey in Africa proclaimed independence. Also on August 1st, in 1978, we witnessed the demise of Qatar Regatta, one of the originators and organizers of the tradition we know in the Black August, Wales to Agosti. Also on August 1st, 1989, Gwendolyn S. King named the first new African commissioner of the Social Security Administration. You know, there's a lot of events that happened in history, but those are some of them. I want to send a shout out to all individuals who have been listening to our show since 2014. Now, shout out to all the individuals behind any lines are currently educating themselves and who also pushing that information to the mind and message of the people to get the people in a positive way and direction. The ones who haven't given up continue to struggle forward and push liberation. Then shout out to all the individuals, you know what I'm saying, that are currently educating themselves and currently doing things in the community and currently being a better asset to not only themselves but to their family, or whether it's a particular nation or organization collectively they belong to. I would say free land all identify with land, say free all the political prisoners. I see long live resistance and long live the spirit of Black August. All right, welcome to the show tonight, Sister Kalita Harris. How you doing, sister?
I am blessed. How are you doing, my brother?
I'm doing well, sister. You know what I'm saying? Before we start off, can you tell the people about yourself before we get into this? Who you are, what you stand for, you know, and get a little understanding of who you are.
Well, who I am, well, I'm a free-spirited being, you know, having this human experience. And I'm just all about humanity, you know, like uplifting the people and exposing the truth through my craft, which is videography. I have a production company, so I say that I'm the visual voice for the people.
Okay. Yeah. Can you tell us how you got started into the videography? How you started with your business, Real to Real Production, and why did you choose that particular name?
Yeah, that's an interesting story that you asked that. Well, I was working for, well, actually, I went to school for broadcast because I thought I wanted to do news until I got into it and I said, oh, this is not for me. But I became fascinated with the behind-the-scenes aspect of it because we rotated positions every week. So when we got into the production side of filming and editing our own packages, that's when I fell in love, because I was like, oh my gosh, you can manipulate what people see on television through editing. You know, this is how they do it. So I just kind of, you know, bought the software, got a computer, and just taught myself how to edit, because they kind of just give you the basics in school. And then after that, I received an internship in Florida. And then I got hired through that internship after I graduated. So 10 days later, I moved to Florida, started working, and then just kind of got into the realm of different video production companies. And then I was working for mega churches and all this stuff. So then I was like, you know what? I want to have my own production company, because one day I was the technical director for this mega church in Tampa. And one of the videographers, I had to direct five different camera people. So one of the ladies, she was in her 50s, and I was in my 20s at that time. And she was like, if you ever had your own production company, I would work for you. And that just sparked my brain to say, really? You know, like, you listen to me? You know, okay. And you're like my elder at that time. So I asked one of my colleagues, I said, I'm interested in starting my own production company, so I need a name. So what's the first thing that comes to mind when you think of me? And she said, well, you're Real. And I was like, okay. So then I just played on that, and that's how Real to Real birthed. It was like taking, you know, your Real, your vision back in the day, the Real, and making it into a reality. So Real to Real Productions was birthed and 2006 in Tampa, and then the whole housing market crashed, so I had to start all over. But I actually quit the job and got hired through my production company. So they hired me back as a contractor, and then I could set my own price and everything else. And I was like, oh, this is the life. And then I ended up getting some clients from that church as well. And then after that, I just branched off and did my own thing. And then the housing market crashed, so I moved back to Columbia, South Carolina, and had to start all over. And then it probably took me about a year or two to get back on my feet. And then let's fast forward to where I am now. I've been doing this for 14 years, and one day I was in my office downtown Columbia, and I read in the newspaper that Columbia City Council wanted to do something about their homeless situation. And one of the, well, the solutions were to leave town, go to a shelter on the outskirts of town, like 10 miles away from the city, or be subject to going to jail if you're caught on the street. And I would communicate with, you know, humans all the time on the streets, and I was just like, what if that were me? I'm an empath. I said, what if that were me and I had to just leave and I have nowhere to go because I live here, you know, I'm a native here. So what does that really look like? So I said, well, I want to do something about this. So I started this journey. It took 7 years, but I started this journey, and I just said, hey, I have the tools, so let me just start documenting what I see around me. And that's how it started. So it took 7 years because I still had to, you know, work and produce my own thing and then fund it all. So, but I would say probably like 2017 is when I kind of went full force. So it's a three-part series thus far. The first one has been released in January of this year. So it is on my website, noaddressdocumentary.com. And now I'm working on part two, which features Atlanta. And I kind of had to change the narrative on that since COVID, to see how people are coping with COVID. So I hope to have this out at the end of the year.
Okay. Now, in regards to the name of the documentary, what is the significance of the term No Address? What is the significance of that?
The significance of having no address just means a lot. That's the name of the documentary. And having no address kind of just sets it where people will know what that means. Like, if no one is privy to anything that's going on with homelessness, it's like when you say no address, they're like, what does that mean? I have no address. But what does no having an address really means? And that means, you know, you can't get a job, you can't get ID, you can't get a home. Like, all of that trickles down, this whole domino effect of not having an address. And then it just sparked me to, you know, I really focus on the criminalization aspect of it, because people are actually going to jail for not having a home. And it started there in 2013 with Columbia, South Carolina, and that's when I wanted to venture off to other cities and states to see how criminalization affects that city or state. So it's actually been going on since the 80s, you know, doing my research and going to D.C. and talking to, you know, the experts that deal with this on a daily basis. They were saying that this started in the 80s, and now there are over 180 cities that have ordinances in place that criminalize homelessness. And what that means is, like, panhandling, urban camping, lying on a bench, sleeping on a bench, you know, all kind of things can, loitering can basically get you a ticket to jail or a citation. But those citations add up. And if you don't have a home, if you don't have any money, how can you pay for this? So then you end up in jail.
True indeed. You know, for the people who don't know about ordinance, can you get can you tell us where you actually can find those in regard to in the city? What can you actually find those documentation that you read upon to get an understanding of them, the ordinance?
Well, you can just Google it in every city, you know, like through city council. They're the ones that actually make these decisions. So ordinances, statutes, whatever, laws, whatever you want to call them, but they're mostly kind of statutes that they implement whenever they feel like it. So, yeah, a lot of people have – it's basically the same everywhere, but some are more intense of what can land you a citation or a ticket to jail. You know, and then some people think that is really a solution, because they say, oh, well, they have a roof over their head and three meals a day, but people don't know what that does to a person, you know, and then you're going to be put into the slave mentality of the labor system as well. So you're free labor, probably was making more money panhandling than you do doing the labor in jail. And then when you get out, now you have this record, so you can't get a home, you can't get a job, you can't vote, you can't. So it's just all these things that are not, that are counterproductive to what people are trying to do to get themselves out of this situation.
True indeed. Now, can you tell how relevant and important is your document right now in regard to the COVID situation?
It's so relevant, and it's so, like, timely, where so many more people, I just read an article where there can be up to 29 million people on the streets due to evictions because of COVID, and they've already started evicting people as of this week. So, you know, you still have to go through the 30 days before you go through the court or whatever. But if they're giving out notices now, you have 30 days to get yourself together to pay all your back rent, because they did all these freezes. But freezes just means you don't have to pay right now, but you eventually will have to pay. So the ones that can't do that, they're going to end up in a shelter. And then these shelters don't even have enough space and capacity to house the ones that are unsheltered now. So when we have this whole influx of people going into the shelters, or going, no, not even going to the shelters, influx of people that are going to become homeless, they will be on the streets. They have nowhere to go. Or they're going to be doubling up with family members or something, or living in their cars, whatever the case is. But there is no preparation and no solution for this. So right now is really dire to really pay attention to see how this is systematic and it's big business. Just like any other corporation, homelessness is profitable for the people that are in power. And you don't want to get caught up in that.
So one day the prison does complex and some strength, you know. It was a homeless community right down the street from me, right? You know, and I done personally witnessed certain things in regards to, like, you're right in front of, like, a Burger King and a couple of restaurants and stuff like that. So I don't witness the police come down there and bring canines and vans and everything. You know, put everybody in the van, lock everybody up. And I ain't never seen them more. We watched 20 of them. They locked them all up. They ain't never seen them again, right? I was like, damn, this is very interesting, right? The first thing I ever seen.
Yes,
police, like, homeless people, you know, and I'm looking at, like, the certain, like you said, people be looking at certain things in regards to, like, they locked up, they have some food, clothes, and shelter, but it's not about that. It's about, you know, saying the pizza takeaway, it's just all the humanity, because a lot of those people, you know, that I don't talk to some of them, they don't have certain things what's happening in their life. Like, some of the things that we're talking about, that was describing a documentary in regards to, like, family member died, they losing their job, or, you know, or somebody on drugs, things like that, right? So I understand that particular aspect. So a lot of them actually be, I'm going to see it working while they're out there. And it'd be homeless, but it's still working, though, you know? They have a little job and stuff like
they
that.
They just need a home. They don't have mental illness. Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, we always put people in categories, but there's so many categories to the unsheltered, just like there's categories for people that do have homes. You know what I mean? So let's not try to ostracize people and say, oh, you're over here and I'm over here. Like, we're all the same. So you can't treat every individual like they're mentally ill or they're on substance use, you know. Some people are working but just cannot make ends meet, and that's what we're going to be witnessing soon, you know.
It's
a mess. Go ahead.
I said, especially during the COVID situation that's taking place right now, you know, a lot of people are especially a lot of new African business owners, a lot of them are losing business. They're going out of business. Some of the resources not there like they used to have it. People not shopping with a lot of individuals. So a lot of people are using this economic status of these businesses to spot their life. So a lot of people are in that particular state, especially if they can't get particular grants or loans that they can assist them. And even if they can't be able to pay those particular grants or loans back, you know, pay their loans back, the situation still can cause them to be on shelter, like you say, you know. So it's very interesting in regards to the whole situation, right? Especially like that whole different aspect of humanity, you know, the whole different aspect of the pre-industrial slave complex, you know, it doesn't discriminate. Against anybody that can to feel this diabolical system, which is a multi-billionaire corporation, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's very interesting, you know, that you're doing that particular work, you know. And, I commemorate you for the particular work you're doing, especially in regards to using your information to actually highlight this, to show people the criminalization of how people are being criminals and how they have some laws to criminalize people. I remember some years ago, one of my comrades, she was feeding the homeless people for months and months, right? And sucking away, the state found out. So when she tried to do it again, they were telling her they can lock her up for that because it was against the law, right? And she had been going out and getting people food, toiletries, and it was cold. She was getting clothes, you know, their shoes, boots, all kinds of stuff like that, feeding them food, you know, driving, cracking a little grill, looking at a little park, getting them food, you know, so. We actually went out there a couple of times and did certain things with them, man. It was just disheartening to see that particular aspect that the state didn't want to allow there, right? Really, some BS. You know,
yeah,
but,
and you saw
how they operate, though.
Yeah, and you saw that in the documentary where people were getting arrested just for feeding, you know, humans. And I kind of got around that because I heard about that too when I was, you know, along this journey in South Carolina. And one guy, I think he was in his 20s, and he was like, are you scared? Are you afraid that they're going to arrest you for feeding me? And I said, why are you worried about that? Aren't you hungry? And he's like, yeah. I said, well, don't you worry about that. So I just got privy, and I would say, well, I'll just do drive-bys. So I had meals, you know, and serving them out of my trunk. And then going through, and I said, nobody can stop me doing that. I'm not setting up, you know, this whole operation just to feed in the park or whatever. I mean, we can, you know, bypass some of those things to help those that are in need, because that's just ludicrous to say, I can't feed the least of these, you know, because there's some type of ordinance in place for that. That's just stupid. I don't get it. And I'm just like, what is the point? And even going back to what you were talking about of like the cops being there and doing these sweeps, that's what they call them, when they just come in and raid their encampments and take all of their belongings. And they usually give them, you know, just a few minutes to grab what you can. And then here come the bulldozers and the cops to just make sure that there's no like quorums or, you know, no one gets irate or whatever, just to guard property. But they destroy all of their property, and then people have to start all over and get ID, because it's not easy to go through this system to get an ID, to get your birth certificate, and especially if you're not in the state, if you're not, if you're sheltered in a state that you're not from, it's just a whole nother mess to get through. So during COVID, there's supposed to be moratoriums in place where law enforcement cannot do sweeps, but apparently they just don't care and they're still doing it.
Indeed. You know, it was on our reads months ago. There was a book called Take Back the Land. And it was written by the Haitian brother in Miami. And they formed the liberated zone called Shantytown, the Moses Village, right? And the whole village was founded on people that actually were homeless people, and they were organized. They had their own political government. They functioned there for 6 months until the P's came and bulldozed over and ran everybody else out of there, right? People resisted and stuff like that, ran everybody out of there, right? I'm saying a lot of people and stuff like that, but they were functioning as an independent nation, independent civilization for 6 months, right? They had their own government. They was fighting for the food and clothing, shelter, everything, you know. But it was liberated by the homeless people, organized by Haitians, which is fine. It was real interesting. So it was like, that's something that happened in our time, which happened during October 2006, last 2007, right? That's something during our particular time, right? Especially people who that are involved in the movement. They're just an example of certain things that can be accomplished on different levels, right, for organization. I just wanted to put that out there. You know, and also, you tell you about some of the work that you're doing now.
Can I interject for a minute? I want to know the name of the book again. You said it was called Take Back the Land?
Taking Back the Land.
Taking Back. Okay. I definitely want to read on
taking
that.
Taking Back the Land. Yeah, Thinking About the Land, Emoji Village, Shantytown, that's what it was called.
Okay. Mm-mm-mm.
Yeah. Okay. I want to ask you, what are you doing? Okay, go ahead.
Oh, I was saying that was one of my goals, is taking back the land, because that's the only way we're going to be able to do it. We can look to government and legislature to change some of these statutes, but at the end of the day, it's going to take, you know, boots on the ground, people like us, to create our own change. And our own change looks like housing, right? Because housing is the main thing. Once you have a home, a lot of other things can fall in place, mentally, physically, emotionally. So I want to start implementing alternative housing, and what that looks like is the container homes and tiny homes. And I like container homes because they withstand a category five hurricanes, and you can build up, so you can save space on your land as well. And some of these just look immaculate, you know. And I want to implement, you know, real resources, health and wellness, a big holistic approach, and really rehabilitate people instead of medicating people. And then I'm a farmer as well, so I want to implement agriculture on the land, organic farming, so people can learn how to grow their own food. So when you eat right, mind, body, spirit falls into place, right? You start getting clarity, you start thinking straight, and then you can become an entrepreneur and sell your own produce or whatever, you know? So that's kind of, and then you have to depend on a job. You can become your own entrepreneur. So that's kind of the approach that I want to do, and hopefully everything goes well by next year. I will have a couple of pieces of property to start doing that.
True indeed. You know, that's where I live by, you know, the aspect of land of independence. So land is basically independent. You know, once you obtain land, you can build things on it. You can build institutions. You have gardens, you have food, or you can create your own clothing, you know, everything, you know. That's the thing. That's the goal. That one is the main goal, especially in regard you push toward a revolution, right? You know, I want to ask you, what are you doing now in regard to the community? I know you told me you're doing certain things with a couple of organizations, community, in regard to creating documentaries and spreading information and education. What are some of the things you're doing currently right now?
Well, currently I'm still interviewing for No Address Part 2, which features Atlanta. So I need a few more interviews, but some places are shut down, and I'm kind of waiting for them to open back up because I don't want just Zoom interviews. You know, that's just, I want to make it more authentic as possible, and having that human connection, you can kind of get more out of people. So I'm kind of waiting on a couple of organizations to open back up, but now I'm still doing boots on the ground, outreach all the time, as much as I can, at least once a week, sometimes twice a week, and just providing the things that people need, because a lot of organizations and resources have been limited because of COVID, and they're not sending their troops, if you will, out there to do things. So people are hungry. People are very hungry. It's getting out of control, you know, and people are just very grateful for just whatever they can have, and people are coming out there. So I commend everybody that is still, that's not afraid, first of all, and that's still going out there and helping our fellow humans in what they need. So me and my friend Heather, we kind of go out every Sunday, and then I do some things with Madhousers, and they're connected with in-town ministries, so cooperative ministries. So we just kind of do a lot of things like that. And then now I've connected with Kamal and Robbie with community movement builders, and we're doing some things just to bring awareness to what's going on right now with the social injustice and inequality and racism, you know, white supremacy deal, and putting some videos together to create real change and have some action plans together. So I'm just all focused on change right now. That's just what, you know, spirit is leading me to do, and I have the tool to do it. So I'm just, you know, grateful that I'm that vessel, you know.
Okay. If a person wanted to do a documentary, how would it go about doing so? They want to see your documentary.
And they can see my documentary. Check out my podcast. I have a lot going on with that. I just did a podcast today with the brother that's dealing with the detention centers and youth and homelessness. So very powerful interview. And all of that is on noaddressdocumentary.com. So it's kind of a one-stop hub for all the information, even resources. Like I'm trying to build that with different cities and states, but I do have resources for South Carolina and Georgia for people if they know someone that's unsheltered or are unsheltered themselves. You know, they can go to the website and find certain organizations on what they do, like people that provide meals or people that provide showers or whatever the case. We have a list of resources that are there and even articles that are current that's going on right now. So it's basically a one-stop hub. So you can go straight there and get all the information you need.
That's a beautiful thing. You tell me about some of the other documents, some of the other documentary films that you did previous before No Address.
Oh, there's no other. This is it. Like my production company basically is because it still exists. My production company basically does, you know, commercials and promo videos, you know, marketing videos. Like, it used to be live events when it was live events. But, you know, I was basically marketing companies and businesses to brand them. So that's kind of what I do. But this documentary is the very first ever. This is the first time, but I know how to film and edit. So that's why I always tell people, they say, what do you do? I said, anything that can be filmed or edit, I can do. So me being a movie buff and watching documentaries and all of this my whole life, it's like I can do this, you know. I just never done it before. But No Address just kind of sparked that brain. Columbia sparked that brain to say, this needs to be a series. I need to know what's going on around the world, you know. And I don't need, I say three part right now, but it can go wherever, because so many people are suffering and so many people have a story, and every city has a story of how they're handling their unsheltered population.
True, indeed.
No, so, yeah, it takes 7 years. This one has been, I'm going on 2.5 years now, so I don't want to go too long and, you know, put this out. So, yeah, that's basically my main focus.
Okay. No, I want to thank you for coming to our show, Sherry, and now that you're understanding, right? Thank you for the work that you're doing, what you're going to do in the past, the present, what you're going to do in the future, right? I'm going to pass on to my fellow comrade, be knowledge a lot, so he can ask you a couple of questions, right? We move from there. I appreciate you.
Peace. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
No doubt. No doubt. Be knowledge a lot, open, comrade.
Peace, everybody, in Free the Land. How you two doing?
Peace. I'm fantastic.
All right. Am I being heard clearly? Hello?
Pardon me?
Okay, I hear you now. Am I being heard clearly?
I hear you.
Okay, thank you. All right, I definitely have some questions for you. I love what I hear so far. I want to commend you on what you're speaking about. A lot of people just look past, like you said, human beings. I'll go with that. It's definitely a right way to explain what's going on. can you just, I want you to go zone in on, because we kind of went around who you are and everything and your opinion on certain things. Can you zone in on some practical solutions to homelessness? I heard you talk about containers and tiny homes. How can we have a practical solution like that if we do have some land already?
Yes. So I have connected with a few people that are doing kind of the same thing. It's a organization called it's HOPE. It's HOPE is an acronym, but for HOPE. And they are in Florence, South Carolina, and they are implementing tiny home villages as well on wheels. So I kind of like that. And then they're going to have like a laundry service and all of that. So they have the blueprint ready, doing the thing. And the guy that's the director of this organization is running for mayor in Florence. So, and he also did a documentary called Unsheltered, where he went and, you know, kind of lived a life as a homeless person for a week in conjunction with an actual homeless person. So it was very interesting, and we connected through my documentary as well. So he is implementing something. I know some other people here in Atlanta that are doing some things on the West End and in Clayton County, building tiny home villages and affordable housing. And it's not just for the homeless, but just people that just can't afford these expensive homes. I mean, when you go around Atlanta right now, these condos are $600,000 starting, you know, and then there's no land. You're on top of each other. So I just don't even get that. It's nothing but luxury housing, and you have to have affordable housing in conjunction with luxury housing. So that's one of my practical solutions. Some other ones in the documentary, like just things that are needed. There's a company that is called the Period Project, the Homeless Period Project, and they give out, you know, sanitary products to women that are homeless, because people don't think about these things, you know. And then now they implement it in high schools, because there's a lot of girls in high schools that don't go to school because they can't afford it. You know what I mean? So these are the underlying things that we overlook. But if you don't address them and bring them to the light, people will never know. So the first thing that I want to do is bring education, bring awareness, let you know what's really going on. And then we say, how can we create real change? So there are a lot of things. And then it's another place in South Carolina where their libraries have social workers. And they're probably only 5 in the country that have social workers. And that makes a lot of sense because a lot of the unsheltered congregate at libraries, right? So why not offer services while you're there, you know? So a lot of these things we can kind of cross-pollinate with other states and cities to say, okay, this works here. We can implement this state as well. So communication is the key, first of all. People need to communicate to see what it is and not say, well, I have to do it all by myself. But there are models out there. We just need to bring it to light.
Okay. Thank you for that. Now, you know, we speak a lot about, particularly speaking on George Jackson Radio and George Jackson in general, transforming the criminal mentality to a revolutionary one, and to be even more certain, to a new African revolutionary mentality, right? So can you tell us how, if so, homelessness turns into what's called criminal activity?
Meaning?
Yeah, no, I'm just asking to connect the dots because usually when people are homeless, they have to do other things to survive, you understand? So they have to do what's called illegal and things of that nature to survive. So in healing the criminal mentality, can you link to us together how healing homelessness or eradicating homelessness can help kill a lot of the criminality in our communities?
Well, okay, let's go back, because if you commit a crime and you're unsheltered, that's one thing. But if you're implementing a crime because you are unsheltered, that's another thing. So a lot of these people are not criminals at all. They are just making it a crime to do certain things. So, but if someone goes and robs and steals and hurts somebody or whatever, that's a whole nother thing. But then people need to look at it that mostly the unsheltered are targets of criminal activity. People come and rob them and beat them up and kill them. And, I mean, I don't know if you know, but last month, 5 unsheltered people died, got killed, you know. So we have to understand there's no protection for them. And then the ones, the law enforcement that are seeing these mentally ill people and want to call them criminals, they need to have some type of practice in place to have social workers or caseworkers to come and say, we need to call somebody and just not arrest them or think that they are going to commit a crime. That's just anybody. Like, I can go way back on this woman call because her son was mentally ill, but he was, you know, outrageous and going crazy, and she called the cops, and then they ended up killing him, you know, because they don't know how to deal with mental illness, and that is not their job. But if they were to be able to be trained and have someone on duty or to call to say, I need you in this situation, because these are the signs that I recognize that this person is mental, it's not that they are a criminal, we need to connect those dots. So that's how we can get them from becoming a part of the system. My opinion.
All right. Thanks. Yeah, I like how you put that, because, like, I grew up somewhere where there was a so-called tent city, and usually people who are homeless, if you say human beings, they just get criminal activity attached to them for some reason. People think if you're just out on the street or if you're homeless, you must be on drugs or you must be doing something wrong or something, when that's really not the case. So I guess statistically, if that's the right way to ask, is there any group of people or who's more likely to become homeless in today's time?
Right now, anybody. During COVID, anybody. Because so many people are a paycheck away of becoming homeless or being on the streets. I don't even know what the statistics are with that. And the statistics, if you watch my documentary, federally they say the statistics of homeless individuals are over 500 1,000. That is so false, because what's on record is 3.5 million. Then you watch the documentary, according to the National Coalition on Homelessness, it's 6 million. So we have 6 million unsheltered people, and that's probably not even including the youth, okay? So we have 6 million, and then now you're going to try to add another 29 million on top of that? It's going to be crazy. But we always said a lot of people are paycheck away, a paycheck away, a paycheck away. Now it is more evident than anything, because the paycheck has stopped for a lot of people, you know, or they may have been 1 month they can survive. But how many months have we been into this situation now? So if it wasn't for unemployment, which may end very soon, what are people going to do? So now let's think about it. The predictive programming of it all these songs and all this music talking about savages, 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 and I'm a savage and all this bull, this is what we're going to see played out. And then that's going to be more criminal activity to put you in jail. You know? So I always connect the dots with you. This is where the dots are going, and it's not looking good unless we do something about it. And all I can do is my part and be a, and ask people to join the movement that I'm going to do. But let me implement it first. But I have the model. But let me implement it, because I'm a doer. So let me implement it, and then I can say, bam, this is what you can do, this is what you can do, this is what you can do.
All right. So I kind of want to go into some of the other kind of films or you're interested in, the things you do. I read about sci-fi in your bio and a feature film, Kindred Spirit. Can you kind of switch over really fast and tell us about sci-fi for those that don't know? Because I guess people like Star Wars. So what is sci-fi?
Well, this particular sci-fi is very interesting, and I can't talk about it too much because we are in development and we're attaching a director to it right now. So I got to kind of keep that on the hush because of contractual and non-disclosure purposes. But it's going to be very, very interesting connecting human life and animal life. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Okay. Sounds good.
I'm not directing or editing it, but I'm a producer on that particular project.
Okay, is there anything that influenced you in particular? Cause I see how you transformed. You went broadcasting, and then you took the next step. So when it came to sci-fi, what kind of led you looking towards that?
It's all about the script, you know, and not really like, oh, the genre too much, but the script is so well written, and me being an editor, I can actually see it be edited as he writes. So that's what drawn me to this particular project. So I'm excited about, and then it has a lot of humanitarian aspects to it. So it's going to be a really, really good, really, really good show. I mean, good movie if it gets picked up. Well, when it gets picked up, I'm going to speak it into existence. When it gets picked up, it's going to be really fascinating because there are other countries that are kind of doing some of these things already. So it is relevant.
Okay, so I see the rest of your accomplishments with the Real to Real production company and things of that nature. I see you have a lot of things lined up, and like I understand about the disclosure about this. I know you mentioned one site before, but can you tell us, so it's back on, and those that just tuned in, where can we get any of your work, or where can we contact you, anything like that, inquiries?
Yes, so on the production side, Real to Real Productions, you can go to r2rpro.com. So that's r2rpro. So that's my production company. You can see all the work that I've done on that level. And then for the documentary is noaddressdocumentary.com. So you can listen to our podcast, you can watch the documentary, you can purchase T-shirts, like everything is on that site, even resources, articles, all the things that you need. So it was a very intense site, and it's a one-stop hub, so you don't have to keep going this place to that place to get the information you need. I try to keep it all together. So no address documentary is kind of where you want to go. And even if you go to rpro.com, it leads you to no address as well. So that's my main focus. So like I said, the goal is to have Atlanta Part 2 completed by the end of the year.
All right. I don't have any more questions for you. I do want to thank you. I know there's callers on the line, so I'm going to pass it back over. But what I will say in your closing remarks, at least to me, you know, there's going to be callers. Just can you remind us of some very basic ways that we could help right in our community with the homelessness problems that you're talking about, and how can we learn more to see everyone as a human being, you know? So how can we help just in a basic way?
Absolutely. Great question. And on my podcast, I always do a kind of like tip week, month, a tip of the week or month or year or whatever, to continue being helpful to society. I'd say just first of all, acknowledge people. Like the main thing that people are saying is that they are looked upon like they are something else, like an alien. That's why I don't really use that word homelessness. I interchange because that's what people are familiar with. But homelessness just sounds like, oh, you know, just something so bad, or is it a dis-ease, you know? And I don't want people to constantly put people in categories. So the first thing that people want you to do is just to acknowledge them, look them in the face and say hi, just speak. And that just brightens somebody's day, just saying, how are you doing today? Because you don't know what people are going through at any particular moment of time, especially now, even if you have a home. A lot of people are depressed. A lot of people are going through situations and don't know what to do or make ends meet. So first is just having that human connection. Just talk to people, look them in the face, speak to them. Second, just if you're driving, keep things in your car, you know, just like a snack or a water or a mask or anything, especially now, and just hand it out, because you see people with signs all day long. And one guy I passed this past week, and his sign said, I bet you nobody will read this. And we turned around and was like, well, we read your sign. And, you know, we had goodie bags and stuff for it. But just to have just little items, you know, some sanitary items, a hygiene kit, or something that you can do would just bless someone, you know. And then, like I said, you can go to my site and see some resources and just say, hey, this is what I can do to help, or I can refer you to a place, because a lot of people don't know where to go or what to do. So just those little steps can make a big difference in people's lives. So I try to carry things in my car all the time when I'm traveling and just hand it out, you know?
All right.
And if you're scared of people, connect with someone that does, that donates, and give it to an organization or a group of people that go out in the streets and boots on the ground, you know? And we'll be happy to supply it, because there's always a need.
Okay. Actually, as you were speaking, one more thing came to mind. If you could explain, if there's a such thing, what is the scope or how broad is it when you say, or I'm going to use it one more time, like you said, because it's interchangeable, so people get what I'm asking. Homelessness, does that just mean people on the street, or what does that mean, people going home to home? Those of us that had to stay with auntie growing up on and off, and this one, what is homelessness?
Homelessness means you do not have an address to call your own. No matter where you're staying, that's the category. That's how they statistically put people in that category. If you do not have a physical address.
Okay, that's a good definition, actually. So I agree with that. All right, again, thank you. My name is B Knowledge. I'm going to pass the phone, you know, the mic back over to Brother Bomani and the callers. And thank you.
You're welcome. I appreciate you. Are we still on?
I appreciate you, young Tyra. Open the line to another caller right quick. If you got time,
on line for another call. Let's see what he's talking about. 562-212, your line is open. You have any questions, comments, statements, or announcement to do? To announce at the time, please do so at the time. 562-212, your line is open.
Greetings, woke people or woke people. I came in a little late, but I was waiting for the sister, and oh man, when I think of Kindred, I think of Octavia Butler, who is into her own sci-fi, but I know you can't touch that, so.
Yeah, I know. It's just not my project personally, so I don't want to do that to the writer. Yes.
I'm excited, though, so I'll be looking for Kindred and following your site. I work a lot with people. We say the unhoused. Sometimes we use that term instead of homeless, but homeless mm-hmm. is the go-to phrase. And we say house keys, not handcuffs, because people are homeless or houseless, then they are usually victimized by the police and anyone else. Like you said before, it's so true. Most of the people that I deal with in Los Angeles are from every aspect of our social existence. Some of them mm-hmm. are ministers. Some of them have been performers. Some of them have come from wealthy families. Some of them are popular stars that you knew, you know, and they're down there and all their parents, you know, or something like that. So it could be anybody. A lot of people, and I'm sure you spoke to that too, is a lot of working. There's a working poor because mm-hmm. people can't afford to pay that first and last.
In minimum wage, it doesn't make any sense that we're in 2020 and minimum wage is still $7 in certain states. You know,
and then I heard in some it's even lower than that.
Mhm.
Mhm. Which is unbelievable, but I wanted to get your site, the documentary address again. My name is Sukari. And I work with Los Angeles Christian Health Center. I work with Los Angeles Community Action Network in Skid Row and the National Healthcare for the Homeless Council, which is nationwide. And
wow.
So, yeah, I do work back and forth with them trying to facilitate what it is just getting people to understand how to walk through. But people... That's the one thing about when you go to some of these organizations, they have such rigid guidelines that nobody wants to participate in that. They're making mm-hmm. They're making it almost like jail for someone to get a studio or 300 square foot room. You know, it's crazy. So folks don't always want to follow that, so they will stay in the streets and they become quite a little community where they watch out for each other and they see who's among them that's not supporting or building up where they are to get to a better state. But yeah, what you mentioned about what was the criteria for to consider a person that was not housed? Generally, if you don't have your name on the lease,
right?
If you're
right.
not on the lease. Yeah, you're out of luck. But a lot of people, they don't consider that, you know, but that's what it is. And like you said, you're going from place to place, like you said, from auntie, the best friend, the cousin, to whoever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you learn
these things. Together. You lay your head, right?
You share your experiences, and that's what helps another person. And those goodie bags, and oh, I could just go on the garden in LA. At LA Can, we have rooftop gardens, and they're doing the earth and neighborhood community gardens. It's like it's when you started speaking, I was like, oh my goodness, yes, it's in the air.
yes, it has to happen.
Yes, they're doing the baggies. I'm in a remote area right now, but I still keep in touch. I'm on the phone all the time, either listening here with Bomani and who's coming up and the folks that are present like yourself, and then I'm on the phone with the people back in California. I'm in Alabama.
And I love so it.
Yeah, my mom, she wasn't well, and we started taking care of her. So we've been here with her, and so now we're maintaining the land that our parents set up for us. And, so the struggle continues. I really would like to hear you say that documentary you said, was that No Address documentary?
Yes, noaddressdocumentary.com. That's the website. And I would love to connect with you. When you go on that site, if you can send me an email, because I was in Skid Row about 2 years ago, and that was like the most hellacious thing I've ever seen in my life. And if we don't do something about it, all of America will look like Skid Row, okay?
Yeah,
so
it can be. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, go ahead.
It could be spooky down there, but basically it's a festival sometimes, especially when you know the corners to go to. But it just happened recently that they started coordinating. There's a we call it the white tent, and it's for a police watch. And the lady who's occupying it is teaching people how to sew, and she's also just saying she's not leaving until everybody's housed. And if you saw Skid Row, you know that's some work.
Yes.
And that has nothing to do with the people on the bridges, on the sides of the roads, the train tracks, and all of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, go on.
I plan on going back there. So everything that you're doing is aligned with what I want to document for that particular series, because I don't know if you heard that it's a 3-part series. So Columbia was first, then Atlanta, and then different cities in California, and one including, you know, Los Angeles, Skid Row. So I would please send me an email when you go on the site, and we can further the conversation.
For sure. Thank
awesome.
You, guys. And,
thank you, sister.
Ashe, sister, Ashe.
Ashe, yes.
Freelance Mama Star, I appreciate you coming on. Appreciate you coming on and joining the dialogue. I appreciate
it. Thank you, bro. You always have great commentaries, education.
No doubt. Liberation.
Yes,
indeed. So you have how many time do you have? No, Zach, I want to open up. How many more time do you have?
You have more calls?
Yeah, I have more calls. How much time do you have?
Let's roll with it.
Okay. I'm opening up the line. Okay. 240-286, your line over. 240-286, your line is open. Your line is open. You have questions, comments, statements. The guest leaders for this time. Your line is open. Okay.
I'm sorry, Peace. My line was muted. And so, Peace, Kalita, hi. I'm Brother Ezekiel Hill of the Ringstone Network. And, you know, yes. Yo, bro, look, like, and to the family, I drove down to see it, and I saw her work. And when I left, I was afraid to say, compare it with Michael Moore, you know, because I didn't want to offend her, you know, but No Address is beyond that level. So I would recommend for anybody that would like to see it, they should go see it. Because when you leave, you'll be in the lobby talking to your friends like what happened when I saw her production, and people were inspired by it, you know, truly inspired by it. You know, because it's some complexities that she put in that movie. Worse, she put that mayor on the spot. And I don't know how he took that, you know, that you saw. You saw the prison camps and, you know, and there were things that just paralyzed me to looking at the reality of that, they have monetized homelessness. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And still make more money on it. And so I appreciate, you look at the onset of Michael Moore and the things that he's done to make people look and think differently in some ways. But No Address, definitely, folks, should look at, you know, when you look at now that they got 28 million people that are on an unemployment that they've injured and put on unemployment, and now they're just saying goodbye. You know, and it's not a threat that it could happen, but it's something to look at in terms of, like, how they monetize your system and then take money from you. So I applaud Kalita for what she did, you know what I mean? And, you know, it just made me look at it in another perception because of her compassion for it, you know, like that. So, and I just wanted to tell people about that. And I didn't have any questions, so I yield the floor.
Thank you, Brother Yusufu. I appreciate all of your support and for coming down with you in a whole other city. And you've been, you know, with me throughout this journey. And to see the final product, I appreciate your comments.
Oh, yeah. Because it was like immediate. It's like, I'm a helper in every way, protect that. Because it's very serious, you know. That,
mm-hmm.
You know, when you see the film about a love affair, that she captured, and she captured the love affair that was a homeless people, and then to find out in the credits, one may have died and one may have disappeared. You know what I mean? And it was just
give them the whole documentary. Let them watch it.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I shut up. You know, I'm your best advertisement. I knew it before, but thank you. I love you for what you do, and I hope you continue with your passion to help folks. And I yield. Yeah. Thank you, Kalita. Peace.
Peace. Love it.
I appreciate you calling in, brother. That's okay. I'm open on another line. Uh, 312-885. Your line's open. You have a question, comment, statements or announcement, your line is open. 312-885, your line is open. Thank you for your time.
Hey, Brother Bomani, this is Hondo. How you doing?
Yes, sir. What's up?
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Hey, Freeland, brother. And I really want to express my appreciation for all the work the sister has done. Of course, I don't really have no questions either, except for... I don't know. I already looked up the website, so we're going to, you know, try to club it up, at least say something about it in the newsletter, try to give us some more support. And it's a very important work you're doing, so we appreciate that. Mm-hmm. And I don't really have any questions, just to express my appreciation. And I have listen to you and try to see how we can maybe try to duplicate or I don't like to say, like, just have something in my car when I'm driving around, you know,
right.
Be more mindful of that reality, you know. There was a healthcare for the homeless program here in Chicago. I don't know if they still have it, but I will look into something locally because it's the kind of issue that you got to think globally but act locally. I think housing is a human right. And it's a damn shame that we got people homeless or without homes. I don't want to use any stereotype language or nothing. But it's been a bee in my bonnet for a long time. I think that's really all I have to say.
Well, I am thankful for you and continue to spread the word and let people know, you know, because a lot of people aren't privy to this. They already have their preconceived notions of what homelessness is, and homelessness has grown so much since what they used to call bums or winos, you know what I mean? It's basically people without a home that are being treated like they're the bottom of the bottom, and then their mentality starts falling into place like that too. And we gotta constantly lift our brothers and sisters up so they don't become those chronically ill statistics, you know. So
you're absolutely right, sister, because some of our elders who were passed on, like Kwame Ture and Donald Cox, they talked about the crushing poverty that people are experiencing, and it's only getting worse, you know. And this the houselessness is just one aspect, but we do have some. There's always some glimmers of light, like what you're doing. There's the Chicago anti-eviction campaign, which people are actively trying to find housing for people, because we have a situation where there's a lot of empty spaces and nobody in them, and there's a lot of people on the streets without spaces. You know, that's a crime against humanity. So we need to struggle and work as hard as we can. So I put our sign up on your website. It's info@rebuildcollective.org. That's our email address. And just keep us on the mailing list and keep us in the loop. And your video project sounds interesting too.
Thank you. Yeah, and you all can watch the trailer on there too to get a gist of what it looks like in the different cities that I'm covering. And even like through gentrification and stuff, that's a whole nother level of putting people out of their homes, especially our elders. And when I was on the streets last week, I've seen more and more of our elders out there, and it's just so disheartening, you know, because what kind of income can they particularly get? You can't just say go get a job, you know, when there's no job for that particular demographic right now. So, yeah,
it's very hard. It's very disheartening and very frightening.
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking of something.
Thank you so much.
I had a senior moment because I'm not a spring chicken myself. I was thinking about something. Thank you, Brother Bamani Conrad, for having a sister on the show. And is it okay if I tweet out the documentaries?
Do
my
it.
Twitter followers.
Take it to the masses. That's the goal. Let them, the masses need to see it. You know, the people
gonna,
that don't know.
We're going to take care of that. Yeah, we're going to take care of that. We're going to tweet that out.
Right. You're talking about the rebuild. You're talking about the rebuild. These ready before you leave?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, it's a organ that we're trying to put together on a regular basis to try to inform the community of the struggle for land and independence and socialism, but we also unite with all forward thinking efforts by humanity. So you might be a land based nationalist, or you might be a socialist, or as long as you're not a capitalist, we can work with you. recognize. Well, even some capitalists, if they have some kind of progressive agenda, you know, but we're gonna be looking at them through the side eye.
Well, I will definitely check out your site, yes, because it seems like it's in conjunction on some level of what I want to do.
Absolutely. RebuildCollective.org. That's our website. We put out about 4 or 5 issues of our newspaper, and we plan to keep going. So just check us out, you know, and then give any feedback, criticism, comments. We welcome it, but we recognize the importance of spreading the word and pointing out to people that there is things we can do to fight the beast. We don't have to take all this shit lying down. Thank you again for your efforts.
You're welcome, and thank you.
Right on, sister.
Appreciate you.
All right, man.
Appreciate that comment. That's up. Relax.
Oh, no problem. I'm trying to listen every week when I can, brother. You know, you're doing some great work. So we wanna acknowledge that and spread the word.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. I appreciate it, Connor. You're doing some great work yourself, man. I appreciate it, man.
Right on. All right, I'm gonna mute myself so I don't be acting a fool.
I'm going to open up the line for another caller, sister. Okay. 111111, your line is open. You have a question coming for the guests or statements or announcements, please do so this time. 111111, your line is open. You have a question coming for statements for the guests, please do so this time. Your line is open.
Bure ID, free the land. This is Elder Mama Kanye.
How y'all doing?
Where? How you doing, sweetie?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm holding on by my fingernails, gripping real tough and real hard. I really appreciate you. I'm going to ask that you be patient with me. I'm an elder. I'm blind. I'm predominantly wheelchair bound. And I have an enormous history in the struggle for black folks. And I was attacked by, I'm in Ohio. I was attacked by the government here. And with everything else that happened to me, they also took my home from me. And I lived in my car for quite a while. It's been 20 years, and I still have more homeless time in than I have time in the home I'm in now. I used to do things like get in my car. I lived in my car for a while, as a matter of fact, and I would put different foods like Enfamil and cases of water and make sandwiches, and I would start at the end of one street and go all the way to the dead end of that street and then turn around and go back and then go home. And so when I'd see people with signs, you know, we'll work for food or that kind of thing, I would just hand food out. If I went to a restaurant, I would see a sister sitting on the steps of the restaurant, and I watched. Mm-hmm. So everybody would go in and ignore her.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd go in, and I'd order my food. And as I was getting ready to leave, I'd order a platter for her, a platter to go. And I'd come outside, I'd get down on one knee, and I'd ask her if she'd be willing to accept a meal from me. And she used to see the look on her face.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody does that. Nobody
right.
does that. I as an elder, this homeless thing, I mean, I did research before I went blind, and for especially elders who were on the verge of losing their homes through foreclosure and that kind of thing, I did research and found out that there's some laws from the 1800s that apply to us, and by being locked up based on lies, it motivated me to learn how to write affidavits. And so I would help folks, especially those up against foreclosure, and teach them how to write an affidavit and fight. And the majority of those affidavits, they'd win. They'd win their cases. So I think that this attack against me, I don't know about everybody else, but I think the attack against me was for the purpose of me learning how to be even more helpful than I was before I was attacked. You know, mm-hmm. I do stuff before I was attacked, but I'm learning. And I'm proud of you for just putting that information out. Nobody, I didn't have you when I was homeless. And I'm really glad that there are homeless people that have you to assist them and improve their quality of life. I thank you, precious heart. And if I can stand any taller so that you can stand on my shoulders, I am humbled to do so. I thank you.
Well, you are lifting me up more than anything, because you actually went through the struggle and learned from the struggle and how to rise from it. So that's inspiration to me, you know. And are you in a home now?
I'm in a house.
Great.
State of Ohio attacked me. They took my home from me. So I'm in a house that's one third the size of the one they took from me. So it's a challenge.
I bet.
You know, I get these inspectors that come in because I'm an elder and I qualify for subsidies, and they'll come in and inspect and say they're not going to approve me because I'm a hoarder and I have clutter. But they picked the wrong one because I write affidavits.
Right.
I wear the inspectors out so bad, they just tell each other each year, don't even bother to mess with her. Just pass her place. Don't even worry about her. Just pass. Because otherwise, I got them in court.
Yeah, you know the law.
My home ever again. That's just not an option. I'm sorry. You got me mistaken for the wrong person.
Right. Well, good for you. Yeah, and that's how you have to fight them. You have to go through that. And I also want to mention another resource is the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty. They are, like, amazing to me because when I interviewed them, I learned so much from D.C. Like, I needed to get to the head people because, you know, I don't want all opinions. I need to know the facts. I need to know the numbers. I need to know the law, right? And that's how you combat this and knowing that everything that they are doing is unconstitutional, you know. And when you know that and you have people to fight for that, then you can get off. But there's not enough people that are speaking up on that level for the unhoused, the unsheltered, you know. So they have educated me on how to deal with things. And even with South Carolina watching that documentary, they all stood up. It's an organization called Homeless Helping Homeless, and they all band together with the law to put the pressure on city council to rescind this ordinance and this vote that they implemented, you know. So it's the power of the people, and that's why I'm saying, yep, people don't understand how another call came in, sorry. People don't understand how powerful we are. So me just being that visual voice is leading people to use their voices, you know?
Yes.
Because you have the information to do it. So I'm just thankful for people like you that are implementing this and educating yourself to say, this isn't right and I'm not going to take this. So even going to the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty's website, they have webinars that are dealing with what's happening right now and how we can stop, like, the sweeps, the evictions, the this, the that, because all these lawyers are coming together pro bono to help humans, you know.
That's
so
excellent.
I thank you, and I'm so glad that you have risen out of that, because that is not a good place to be in. That's not a good place to be in.
The first time I was homeless, my children, my youngest four children were with me, and we lived in my car until we could reverse it. And then this last time, my children were older teenagers, so they were able to. I just went through it by myself, and they were able to avoid just merely because of their age, and they were able to move away from what I was going through. And the other thing I wanted to share with you is there's a sister, Michelle something. She wrote a book called The New Jim Crow. And she's got a section in there about brothers and sisters coming out of prison or being sent to prison and losing and becoming homeless and losing every opportunity for everything as a result of that. And so this one particular area she talks about in this city, I don't even remember the name of the city, where she was working with an organization like you talked about, the organization of attorneys that help homeless people or brothers and sisters that come out of incarceration. Well, she said that was an eye-opener for her because in the neighborhood that she was working in, providing representation as an attorney, not one brother or sister qualified for the services because the cops in that area had set up and framed every young person in the area that she was servicing. And so her paperwork says, have you been arrested? And there was no young person that came in there that could say no. And she said, well, I'm sorry, I can't help you. And this one young brother had three telephone books worth of paperwork to show how he was set up by the cops, the whole nine. And she kept saying, but I can't help you. And he got upset, and he turned the paperwork into confetti, and he said, you just like all the rest of them. About 6 months later, she did research and found out what had happened to him happened to everybody in that community that she was trying to service. And she went looking for him. She couldn't find him. But he came back about 6 months after that, and he was staying in the basement with his grandmother. She was the only one in the family that would take him in because he had a record. He couldn't get anything. Couldn't get a job, couldn't get a home, couldn't get food, couldn't get nothing. And so he comes in with a flower pot. He said, I would have brought you some roses, but as you know, I don't have an income and I can't get one. So I took one of my granny's plants and I brought it as my way of apologizing to you. And then she apologized to him because she finally did the research and realized, you know, what was happening to these folks and why they didn't have a place to live and why they were being locked up and why they the name of the book is The New Jim Crow.
And that's I'm definitely familiar.
Yeah.
And the thing is, a lot of people don't understand when people come out of jail, prison, whatever, if you don't have an address, they will not release you. So that's a huge problem in itself. So you're just stuck.
Yes.
You know, or some of them just say, well, it doesn't matter. We're just going to take you to the first bus stop and drop you off, and you fend for yourself. So there's no gateway. There's no programs to help them, safe houses or whatever, because at the end of the day, it's all about capacity. And the way the criminal system is set up and all these even detention centers set up, there's way too many people for the resources that's needed.
Yeah, capitalism is vicious. It's vicious. You can be found not guilty. Do you know you still have to pay fines and fees? I sat in jail. $850,000, and I told my family don't raise a dime. We're going to sit here and wait until it's a reasonable fee. $2,000 was reasonable to me, and I just sat there all that time waiting for it to go down. And they still, I was found not guilty, they still took $200, 10%. So not guilty doesn't really mean that.
No. Once they have you in the system, it's all about money. So.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm proud of you, sweetie. I'm so proud of you.
You're coming to be strong and surviving through this. I'm proud of you. You're the warrior here.
Thank you, sweetheart.
Continue to take care of you and stay well, okay?
Thank you,
I'll be missing you, that positive vibe, you always.
And you the same. I want to know, because I'm blind, I can't see your documentary, but I would like to listen to it.
Oh, you definitely can. You'll feel it, too.
I know.
You'll feel it.
I'm learning.
So noaddressdocumentary.com. Yeah, noaddressdocumentary.com. You can go there.
And somebody to help
me do that. Yes.
I certainly will.
Well, thank you for your.
I yield to you, precious.
Mm.
Bomani?
Yes, ma'am.
You got left, little bro.
Yeah, I know. Sister's going to get out. She's going to get out. She's got something to do.
Okay. I yield.
Yeah, I appreciate you calling in. Your mom kind of thing, Katrina. I appreciate you calling in.
You know, how many years has it
been? Sister, what you having the final thoughts? Leave us with.
I just want to just tell people to constantly stay connected with people. Like, I know we're trying to so-called socially distance, but that's more on a talking level or a media level or whatever. But physical distancing is one thing, but we need to communicate more and educate ourselves more. This is a time for us to detox. The world is detoxing. We need to act accordingly and educate ourselves because we are in this age of information. There's so much information out there for us to not be ignorant anymore and to not be privy to. So just whatever you're passionate about or want to do, I say just do your research and just help one another. Just acknowledge people because social media is making us a little bit more disconnected, but we think we are. But there's nothing like that human-to-human interaction. So even if you have to be 6 feet away, 4 feet away, 10 feet away, whatever, wave, smile, talk to somebody because it's good for the soul. It's good for the soul, and it'll make you feel good because nobody knows what anybody's going through until we communicate, right? Let's just spread the love.
True indeed. I want to thank you for coming to our broadcast right now. You understand it. Thank you for the work you're doing, and I salute you and continue to keep on, you know what I'm saying, and keep strong and don't lose confidence in what you're doing. Keep moving forward.
Oh, I can. I think this is my purpose in life, so I can. I got to continue until I leave the planet. So I appreciate the opportunity, you know, for giving me this platform to speak on what I'm doing, and I appreciate the love and the support from your listeners, and let's just keep thriving. That's all we can do.
True indeed. Peace and love.
Peace and love.
I like to let everybody know that it's a Georgia University Black Organizing Committee is doing having a digital Black Office event on August 1st from 3:00 p.m. to 6:00 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. To find out more about the event, you can go onto Facebook on the Georgia University page, and also the George Jackson page as well. And you also can email me at boomansecure80@gmail.com. Find out more about the Zoom program and how to access to it, how to get code, all things of that nature, right? But again, it'll be August 1st from 3:00 p.m. to 6:00 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we got a list of different people. They're going to be speaking from different issues of Black Africa, from the culture aspect, from the movement aspect, and from the historical aspect. It ranges from organizers of Black August from the initial conception, people that have been involved, people in Black August, you know what I'm saying, from the psychological aspect, historical aspect, and other aspect, performances, African dance, poetry, you know, African martial arts, and other aspects that are show form of different resistance, and other aspects, right? So also, if you got any loved ones or relatives or comrades, social media, enemy lines, please look into our website, which is www.georgejackuniversity.com. Again, it's www.georgejackuniversity.com, which is
GEORGEJACKSONUNIVERSITY. Long live the spirit of resistance, long live the African independent movement, and long live Black August. Free the land.
Ghetto children singing, see, they eager to learn how to become the next world leaders. Brave hearts, revolutionary warfare is all fair, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is all fair, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Book one, strategy, tactics, techniques. Look dumb, but massively notice the weakness in all them. Gotta use it only if necessary. Homie, vestige is very real if enemies carrying heavy steel. Beware the thugs who ain't scared of blood or jail time. When Aryan nations ain't having integration, we so blind of beauty of life. But when my mom said, again, you could be Christ, I wasn't old enough to hold my MP right. Jesus, what is he like? I picture him standing with diamonds on him, little different from the way my mommy saw him. Practice your aiming, physical training and difficult terraining. Test your endurance, try to keep your stamina banging, splitting duchess up, strap up. The army's a school, teaching smart ways to go. I'm thinking Gandhi was a fool, the chronic's a fool. Got me thinking out loud. Sleep on my drunkenness, I blow your brains out. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here.
My revolution is as real as Bobby Seals I build. With dudes and Chris worth a quarter mil and Dick's Hill. For fish scales, the cops, love the time come. I mask up and get my comrade off the bus. Up the beef, I snatch a seed from Chuck E. Cheese and feed them to the rats in the back of the peas. Black fatigue and off the scenes on a sofa. 50-inch flat screen, Louis Vuitton holster. My motions don't appeal to a appellate division. I did it strong for 7 long years in prison. Of the system, I'm like a modern-day Hitler. Black gorilla, crib and blood in one only. Just know my face, I be the case for the wish at the police. Look at the name Lake, go simultaneously with street revolution. 21 gun salute, the new Huey Newton.
Revolutionary warfare is all fair, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is all fair, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Teach our woman how to hold a family down in case something happens to us fathers. Protect the children, grab revolvers. The woman plays an important part of our life force of what we fight for. My heart goes to you, beautiful wife in war.
Enlist and more and talk less. Watch all and trust none. Demand your respect and be ready to die for what you believe in. And ride all the time, not just when convenient.
Justice and freedom, wisdom and understanding. We the lost children of Israel in this Western world region. You ain't a man, you a coward if you can't support the girl you put a seed in.
Strong rule the weak, but the wise rule the strong. It's more to a war than just getting it on. Seal your form, cover your tracks, stay prepared. I don't care, no one's spared.
Revolutionary warfare is all fair, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is all fair, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is all fair, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is all fair, love and war for the cause. I gotta take you off here.